Won't you come unto me? Wash away your sins forever. You shall rest eternally.
I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the joy bell ringing,
the joy bell ringing,
where my friends,
where my friends and loved ones wait.
I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the angels singing,
the angels singing
just inside
the pearly gate. Now I'm safe with my Jesus. He will guide me on my way. I will sing his praise forever. We'll meet in heaven some sweet day.
Oh, I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the joy bell ring,
the joy bell ringing
for my friends,
where my friends and loved ones wait.
I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the angels singing
just inside the pearly gate.
Oh, I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the joy bell ring,
the joy bell ringing
where my friends,
where my friends and loved ones wait.
I can hear,
oh, I can hear
the angels singing,
the angels singing
just inside
the pearly gate.
The love of God within my soul that'll carry me along life's way. I know
I've been washed in the blood since Jesus saved my soul. He washed and he cleansed me up and he made me white as snow. Since Jesus saved my soul, he washed and he cleansed me up and he made me white as snow.
Some people down here like fortune and fame that soon will pass away. When the Lord comes back, he'll claim his own and we'll hear the saints all say, I know
I've been washed in the blood since Jesus saved my soul.
He
washed and he cleansed me up and he made me white as snow. Since Jesus saved my soul, he washed and he cleansed me up and he made me white as snow.
He
washed and he cleansed me up and he made me white as snow.
Thanks so much for having tuned in to the Black Diamond Show. I am Mando Richards. I hope you enjoyed the whole show. Let me tell you about our gospel numbers before I get out of here. The first one was Bill Monroe, Lester Flatt, Earl Scruggs, and all the Bluegrass Boys from back in 1946 doing Wicked Path of Sin. And then we heard a newer band, Authentic Unlimited, from their 2022 record Gospel Sessions Volume 1. You heard Washed in the Blood. Thank you all so much for having tuned into the Black Diamond Show. I am Mando Richard. Drop me a note. Mando Richard, M-A-N-D-O Richard, either Gmail or Yahoo. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll see you next week on the radio.
program is the conclusion to a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, entertainer, civil rights activist, and wellness guru. Gregory died of heart failure on August 19, 2017. He was 84.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Peace to that whole black voice, man. It's the only voice that's honest in America today. And that's basically because that while the white racist power structure was looking at everything, they underestimated black radio because at one time it wasn't nothing but hooping and hollering and playing the next Shake Your Booty record.
Mm-hmm.
And then all at once, things start changing, new people start coming in. And they never realized they would have black voices like you or Tom John or the whole Kathy Hughes piece. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. See, black radio have to be like the black Muslims. Ain't no way in the world the way the system would go after them, they could ever be dealing in drugs.
Right.
And so black radio can never violate. They'd be off in the morning.
In the morning.
And so consequently, I've always felt that money is not power and education is not power, but information is power. So if you give me bad information, I got bad power. The problem in America, which makes your voice so important.
Dick Gregory, comedian, civil rights activist, and spokesman for health issues. This past March, Gregory was the keynote speaker at the 14th Annual Heman Sweat Symposium on Civil Rights, held on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. In 1949, Sweat applied for admission to the UT Law School, but was denied admissions on the basis of race. With the help and assistance of the NAACP, he brought legal action against the university. In the landmark case Sweat v. Painter, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate law school facilities could not provide a legal education equal in quality to that available at the University of Texas Law School, one of the nation's ranking law schools. In 1950, Sweat entered the University of Texas School of Law. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, comedian and civil rights activist Dick Gregory, Part 2, In Black America.
For years, I didn't know Time Magazine, and New York Times had a problem, because no one that I knew was ever in that. And then when the civil rights movement hit, we would see one thing happen mm-hmm. and then see something else go down. I didn't understand the power of white folks, because the little low-level white folks I've been around, and one of the things would make white folks mad, and I don't blame them. See, most black folks is mad at the wrong white folks. See, the white folk we mad at couldn't help us if they liked us. Matter of fact, they'll kill them on the way to get me and you. But we don't know nothing but that low-level, hateful, nasty, ungodly, hate himself and his wife, white boy. And as long as we think, like I did for years, that was the real white boy. I remember we used to make statements, redneck, ignorant, cracker. Well, how dumb do we have to be to realize it can't no reading, no writing, no educated white boy determine policies for America?
Famous for his hunger strikes, his mobilization for social change, his Bahamian diet, his comedy career, and his anti-drug activities, Dick Gregory is a unique and complex man. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, he grew up shining shoes to help feed his family. At Sumner High School, he led a march against conditions in segregated schools and set a state record in track. As a star comedian in the early 1960s, he used biting racial satire and shunned the stereotypes of early black comics. Prompted by the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., he became a civil rights activist and anti-war leader, running for president in 1968, and fasting for human rights both here and abroad. On today's program, we conclude our conversation with Dick Gregory.
When you have AOL and Time Warner make a deal, this is communication. That's all you heard that day. Jane Fonda's stock in 24 hours, just the Time Warner, did, I think, $20 million. And then the next 3 days, it lost $30 billion because they did it with paper money and pulled real money out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you stop and think about, we, on the Kathy Hughes station, the second, third day after the O.J. fiasco.
And this is the one in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had got a peep at the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
I found out later, and that's the power of God is incredible. I found out later that the Russian spy satellite just happened to have been over the West Coast, so they filmed the whole thing. Sent it to the State Department and never got a response back. You know, it's kind of interesting when we have a thing called whisper helicopters. And for those of you who don't know it, whisper helicopter, you can't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 of us can be in your yard for a cookout.
Mm-hmm.
And the whisper helicopter come by, and they can come down and kill us all. Nobody heard nothing except the dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the OJ dog was acting a fool and nobody else heard nothing. It was the whisper helicopters. Now, this is what we do. 5 years later, then wife will come out. I knew Waco from the first day.
Mm-hmm. But the outcome was...
See, most folks didn't know that Waco was Seventh-day Adventist. They played him off of some old radical group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've been in 40 years. And when David Klohars kicked that other thug out, found he was making crack for the government. You see, first, how can I be stupid enough to believe that you would go and buy $400,000 Rolls Royce and reduce them to $1,500 Chevys? How can I be stupid enough you're going to take expensive cocaine and reduce it down to some cheap something that poor folk can afford? That's something wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, he was going to do an interview with the woman from the Waco paper at 8 o'clock that morning. The government made the raid at 7. Now, we got to ask a question. You celebrate your birthday on the eve, just
right.
People who don't know universal order.
Mm-hmm.
It was 24 hours before I came out when the party started. Christmas Eve party, New Year's Eve party.
Mm-hmm.
We burnt Waco down on Hitler's eve of his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, birthday's the 20th, we burn it down on the 19th. 55 days standoff, lying, saying that. Then when the records came out, they said, oh, no, we made a mistake. This wasn't happening to them children. But you etch into the memory bank of people every day. And nobody stops and say, if the United States military can go to a foreign country they never been in before and take our tanks and our heavy equipment and build roads and highways within 24 hours, how come we didn't dig a tunnel under that place and slide under and put some gas in there and put them to sleep? What's that about? Okay. And so when you start looking and, uh-huh. and seeing, and so we were able to say things on black radio that would never be permitted on white neighborhood because of the control. The vicious control, the evilness of the little Cuban boy. Who knows when that fiasco will end, but there's certain questions that have to be asked. See, I never trusted Castro. I'm one of the few liberal-minded, lay my life down for human rights because 98% of Castro's Air Force is white Cubans and 98% of Castro's Army is black Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba, 72% black Cubans. That's not reflected in Miami, so why did he just let the light ones come so America wouldn't? But see, we forget, America pays Castro $500 million. I'm going to repeat this twice. $500 million every month Castro gets a check, and if these rednecks found that out, they'd be out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be too smart. One of the largest naval bases in the world is Guantanamo Base.
Okay, right.
Now, how do I put my base on my enemy territory, and how did my enemy let me keep it there? Something wrong with that picture, man. Mm-hmm. You know, something's wrong.
For those that aren't familiar, and I'm speaking to this younger generation, this new generation, give us an idea of what was like for Dick Gregory growing up in St. Louis.
It wasn't as hard then as it is now because okay. We was ignorant.
Okay.
See, if you're ignorant to what's happening, I never knew anything about I was supposed to go to certain schools.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up inspiring to be a streetcar conductor because black folk couldn't drive streetcars.
Okay.
Think about it. What? And at that time, all the streetcar drivers was white. Only did the bus drivers, streetcar drivers change after the violence, after it became a bad job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they still controlled the union. So if you take Chicago, which is 99% black driver, and the union's 100% controlled, so all they got to do is make a deal with Daley, and then black folks never get no benefits. That's mm-hmm. what we see. So it's a new game and change. But I grew up seeing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, I knew who the cop was. black cop couldn't arrest a white murderer in St. Louis. We had two fire stations, the black fire station, the white fire station, two hospitals, City Hospital number one, City Hospital number two. So it was, we couldn't eat in white restaurants. We couldn't go to a store and try on a pair of shoes. You just have to order it, and they threw your money and your change back out. You can try on a hat, you can try on a dress. See, I didn't know about black folks sit in the balcony and white folks sit down. We didn't have white movies you could go to. So to sit in the balcony in the black movie, you had to know somebody, right, man. That was high class. So when I get to Southern Illinois University and up in the balcony, man, I'm saying, they let me, see, I set the world's record in the high school mile. Didn't get credit for it because I had a nigga. But I thought I was sitting up there because I was Dick Gregory. I didn't know that's what they. And so consequently, growing up black then, it wasn't too much you aspired for. One of the interesting things that I can reach back, that most of your black business people and the people that was talked about education were Republicans. They weren't this new kind of insulting Negro that we have now, the Clarence Thomas type Negro, who, by the way, Clarence Thomas was a Black Panther lieutenant when he was a, he just knew how to trick white folks, and white folks are silly enough to be tricked and go for that okey-doke. But somewhere, and see, I blame black women on Clarence Thomas type Negroes because 98% of them are black, wide nose, big jaws, big lips, kinky hair, and the sister wouldn't go to the prom with them. And so they get mad, all black folks, mad white women, hate us all. So sisters, give us a break, please. And so consequently, what happens is you have Jackie Robinson was a Republican. Jesse Owens was a Republican. Martin Luther King's family were Republicans. And so this new type of Republican that comes during the time and say what white folks want to hear, that vicious one, the one who don't know God, think they do, they feel comfortable with that one. But it's funny, you don't hear them type of Negroes talk out when white folks said the other day that 90% of the women get strip searched in airports is black women, and then the day after that, they bust Federal Express 130 million pounds of marijuana while they watching the sister. But you don't hear that voice when they do a survey, white folks, and say that a black man with a doctor's degree is more likely not to get a loan than a white boy that dropped out of grade school. You don't hear from them. And so I came up where there was a different type of a black Republican that had integrity. And so you was locked in a vicious system that you didn't know any different. You didn't know any better. And so I wouldn't expect, I have 10 children, I wouldn't expect my children to even be able to relate with that. The biggest horror I had is back then nobody carried me back past slavery to who I was. They carried me to Negro history. We hear black folks now talking about Negro history. You don't hear them to talk about the black folks that they forgot to put in the history book. Well, you're dealing with a racist system. Why wouldn't you? I tell black folks, man, if you got folks cheat on the old lady and then go home and lie, what do you think this boy doing? He's trying to cheat on the whole world. But my history go back past slavery. Nobody told me that the strongest two forces in the history of America has always been the black woman and the black church. That's why both of them are under attack. They never blew down, they never blew up a black crack house or burned down a black whole house, but a black church. And the black woman, my God, this country never would have survived without that force. When I think about the hurricane season, and it's kind of interesting because I tell people there's no way I know this, and top meteorologists don't know this. They just don't talk about it. Hurricanes, not his canes, hurricanes, named after, that's the spirit of the black woman. See, all hurricanes start in West Africa at the very part that the slaves was put on the ship. It don't start 10 miles from there or in the vicinity. All hurricanes stay on the water and follow the same trail that the slave ship followed. No slave was offloaded the ship until it got to the Caribbean. No hurricane jumps above water until it gets to the Caribbean. It will hit this country and come all the way up the East Coast, all the way to Maine. Canada's right across the street from Maine, and Canada's never had a hurricane because Canada's never done to black women what America have. And one day when that black sister really understand what her spirit is about, she changed this whole, the whole piece. And so you look at then and now, when you see, I was brought up to believe that if you could just get around an educated white boy, Mm-hmm. The Harvards and the Yales. And I didn't realize that back when I was a child, Harvard had a quota on black folks, and if you was as black as me and you, you couldn't get in Harvard. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell people, when you go to these schools, take out the liberal ones that you, take out their yearbook, go 150, go where Clarence Thomas went to school, Colgate. Go back there and get the yearbook 100 years old, see if you saw anything but Adam Clayton Powell type Negroes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was no room for black folks then, you know. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, what happened as you grew up with this mentality of who you was from slavery, but not back before slavery. So, for instance, young folks today, there's more lies that's told to them by the establishment now, because as you get free and the consciousness opens up, you know, I wouldn't have dared ask the question of my mother because of ignorance of if Easter and Good Friday represent the crucifixion of Christ, which I don't have no problem with that. I have a problem with one year coming in April, another year coming in March, because you can't be killed in two different months. Mm-hmm. Well, I got enough sense now to know that Easter is determined. And then the pagans were celebrating Christmas Easter 3,000 years before Christ was born. And now I realize that Easter is always the first Monday after the first new moon, after the first full moon, after mm-hmm. the spring equinox. So then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday mm-hmm. on your fingers. Yeah. They told me 3 days, but they kept giving it to me on the second day. Mm-hmm. So this cannot happen no more. And so when you look at where we are, it's kind of interesting, your name. Somebody brought me some information once, and I decided that black radio, we could get it out. America's birthday is July the 4th, 1776, but George Washington didn't become president to 89 because there was eight black presidents before him, and the first one was John Hanson.
Right.
So on the Kathy Hughes radio station, we put it out there to John Hanson. Was the first president.
And it's today as we record this program.
It's
John Hanson Day. It's today.
Yeah, well, see, well, let me, I'm going to show you more than that, and I'll give you these documents. Okay. Is John Hanson Day where?
In Maryland. Is they're celebrating it today.
Okay,
yes.
Now. Have you ever been to Maryland?
Yes.
You been on Highway 50?
Yes.
The John Hanson Highway?
John Hanson Highway.
Right, now, let's ask the question. What did a black man do to get a highway named after him? They don't have highway named after black folks in Africa.
Right.
What did he do? So now, after we get it out there, and we do the Stevie Wonder Station and WVO in Chicago, mm-hmm. here's the way a white racist system answers us, and it's very interesting. If you look at that website there, mm-hmm. if you punch that up, here's a come off. What's that headline say? What's that say?
George Washington, our ninth president.
Oh, see? Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing about that, they will tell you that George Washington was the ninth president. They tell you Hanson was the first, but they don't tell you Hanson was a black man.
They certainly don't.
Now, if you get the $2 bill, you ever looked at the left side of the $2 mm-hmm. bill, the black man sitting in the mm-hmm. chair?
Right.
That's John Hanson. Okay? Now, this is interesting, and this is the power of black radio. What's the date on that paper, and what paper is that?
It's August 13th, 1998, Washington Post.
And it says everybody knows what?
Everybody knows George Washington was the first president.
Over here says everybody what?
Everyone is wrong.
Keep after that. What's after that?
John Hanson was elected president 7 years before
now,
Washington.
Now, think about the power of black. Who would have ever thought one of the major white papers on this planet would be forced because of black radio? The trick is, right now, they don't have to say he was a black man. That's how they get around it. But just the fact that it's out there mm-hmm. that, you know, and I tell folks when y'all celebrate Thanksgiving this mm-hmm. year, you know, celebrate it right. Here's the Thanksgiving Proclamation. What does that say there at the top?
Continental Congress. Thanksgiving Proclamation, 1782.
Signed by who?
Signed by John Hanson,
what's his
President,
title?
And Charles Thompson, Secretary.
You see, and the reason I bring this up is I'll get copies of this and give it to you since okay. some kind of way you connected. You know, you mm-hmm. got presidential blood in you. You see, some kind of way when we understand when the pilgrims got here. Mm-hmm. You see, when the Mayflower got here, he didn't, that boy didn't make no mistake. You remember, he had maps of the New World. So he wasn't thought he was going to Calcutta. You see, the trick is, if I say I lost my mind, that's a sympathetic thing. Mm-hmm. See, once I lose my mind, whoever I kill, I can't get the lecture chair. if I say child is lost. When you say lost, so they put the word loss first. And then by the time you deal with loss as a child, you don't deal with what he did with the Indians and stole the country and the whole scene. But when he got here, the Moors was already here.
Right.
And so when the 13 colonies was put together, that was put together under the direction of the Moors. The Moors had so much power. Now, remember, the Moors came out of Spain by way of Morocco. So when the 13 colonies was put together, the first treaty the 13 colonies America had with anybody in the world was Morocco because of the influence that the Moors had. Now, the Moroccan flag was a white flag with a red cherry on it. When Washington became president, he broke the treaty with Morocco. That was the code where George Washington chopped the cherry tree down. So if you don't understand the codes and the system, we won't know who we are otherwise. But there's a spirit inside of us. If we be quiet and listen, we can see that dignity and feel that gentle peace and know that I'm not controlled by a white racist system. You see, white racist people don't bother me. Every black I know is hip enough to make a white racist redneck cracker like them. It's a white racist system that have no mother, no conscience, no God, and which I'm part of. It's in the mind. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask what I was then and now, we knew what was going on in the black community. We don't today unless it's negative. For instance, my baby son, financial analyst for the city of New York, little young punk, if there's 13 brilliant people on the planet, he's between one and three. Now, he can't tell them white folks how to spend $34 billion, but they can't touch it till Johansson analyzes it. Boy ain't combed his hair in 19 years, okay? But so now, I just happen to know that because he's my son. But how many of us have people, we stories we can tell like this, that we 60 Minutes don't tell about. I got a daughter that worked for one of the major Fortune 500 companies, and every day she determined how many white boys are going to be fired. And I said, well, dear, you come from a family of human rights. Why don't you teach them? She said, Dad, they're just too dumb. Who would have ever thought, okay, when I was a little boy, that a little quiet, peaceful black woman, okay, would be in a position to tell white boys, you can't work here no more. I mean, big time, she do $3 million bonuses every year. Went to London School of Economics, got her master's and her doctor's degree. Who, you understand what I'm saying? But if that wasn't my daughter, she got a doctor's degree in sex harassment at the workplace, which means if she came in to testify for you today, they can't bring nobody else in because she's the only recognized authority. Well, if that wasn't my daughter, I wouldn't know that. And so I'm saying, how many others can we multiply like this? And this is why South Carolina got to bring the flag down. That company my daughter worked for wouldn't dare go to South Carolina. To insult her is important as she is to that company. When you look at all the black folks, Maytag run by a black brother, they going. And so this is why there's a whole big difference today that's totally different. And the Clarence Thomas will never get his picture on a stamp, but Malcolm X did. Yeah. You see, in this white boy's mad as madness, he still understands beauty.
Throughout your life, you've always been concerned and conscious about health and diet.
No, we have to change that. I haven't been. And there was a time.
There was a time, okay.
I was a fifth. Let me say this and I'll let you say. I was a fifth of scotch a day, four packs of cigarettes a day. You know, my top weight was 365 pounds.
Right, okay.
I mean, if someone would have told me I sit across you today, today is my 40th day of a water fast. Okay. If somebody would have told me that then, I said, man, what kind of drugs are you on? Now, go back and fetch one to change that.
Well, say
I wish I could say that.
1970.
Yes.
Just go back to 1970.
Now we got it. Yes.
Why has that been such a rallying cry and such a burning desire for you to get that message across?
Because the things that killed black folks and was killing me, the Ku Klux Klan didn't give it to me. The White Citizen Council didn't give it to me. My mother, my school, my church, my government. And I'm outraged that I can go through grade school, high school, and college and know that one of the worst things you can put in a human body is cow's milk. That no one, the worst thing, the third number one killer on the planet is white refined sugar. When I realized that it wasn't the Ku Klux Klan or nigger-hating white folks that injected syphilis into 600 black men in Tuskegee, there was the United States Bureau of Health with the aid of some of the top colleges, research, medical centers in this country. And then when we caught them, we messed up and let them write the protocol. And to this day, not even black folks have asked this question I'm asked now. If you inject syphilis into 600 black men, what about my black woman that lived with him? That was his girlfriend, his wife. And up until this day, when the president brought the brothers to the White House, to this day, nobody has ever said, you can't give it to my man without giving it to my woman. Mm-hmm. And so when I sit around and look at what they've done to my health, I'm going to hold something up. That's Crest toothpaste. If you look at the back where I put a little sign say, do not what? What does that say? Do not swallow. Mm-hmm. Then you got to ask, what do they put in this toothpaste that is so poison they have to put a disclaimer on to say, do not swallow? Now, down at the bottom, if you do swallow, what's that last sentence say? Contact who?
Seek professional health poison control center.
Now, wait a minute. Now, think about this. That's not on rat poison, brother. Listen. The stuff that's in toothpaste is so poison that an ordinary medical doctor can't help you. You got to contact the Poison Control Center. And those of you that out there that's listening, go to the toilet and look at your toothpaste. And it's on there. Mm-hmm. We know that military intelligence was in it, Memphis. When King was killed, mm-hmm. We knew it from interviews. We knew it from military intelligence. This is the first document we able to get our hands on that says... They were there. That come from the general of military intelligence. After 30 years, it says, look back at the date. They were there from March
28th through April 12th,
1968. Now, wait a minute. See, you couldn't be running surveillance every day there and not pick up not only King being killed, but who killed him. That's what makes that so important. This is the first document we have from military intelligence that say he was there. And so, you know, just thank God there's a God and things. You know, one of the things that got declassified under the Freedom of Information Act, my poor grandma, sure, I'm glad she's not with us. Gene Dixon, world-renowned psychic. Do you know right before Christmas of last year, they had to declassify information under the Freedom of Information Act, and Gene Dixon was a pawn of the FBI, and like 18 months before Kennedy was hit, when she put in her column, JFK had to be careful in Dallas. We know now that Hoover gave that to her.
Now, this is interesting. First item in this particular report, March 28th, 1968, 10:22 hours, Dr. King arrives in Memphis, Tennessee to lead a march in downtown Memphis.
From the time he was there to the time he was killed, they followed him.
This has been a tribute to the late Dick Gregory, who died on August 19th, 2017. He was 84. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's AmericanArchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm John L. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
And you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
I urge you to tune in to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your FM dial. If you don't, I'll break both your legs.
You're listening to The Eli Show on 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. You can listen online at WRCT.org, and you can reach us in the studio at 412-268-9728.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, take a look at the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
That was It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas by Meghan Trainor. This is the Christmas episode, a Christmas edition of The Eli Show. Yeah, I mean, if you couldn't figure that out from the first song. And it's also the last episode of The Eli Show for the season. So we're going to try to make it as holly, jolly, and fun as possible. So let's just get into some more music.
Again, you know it's your favorite. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. I was born near Christmas, so it's my favorite. I think it runs through my veins. Anything Christmas makes me happy. And people's hearts are open. I hear the drummer boys drumming, drumming, drumming. I hear the reindeer coming, coming, coming now. I hear the Tweedledee.
was Oh, It's Christmas by Jordan Sparks. Now, I've got a expert Christmas decorator with me today in the studio. What's up?
Christmas decorator? I don't know where you got that from.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. I'm Kai. Hello. I'm on the Eli Show. Don't know how I got here, but here I am.
It's because you're an expert at decorating. Well, Kai, I heard this ridiculous thing that you have to do Christmas decorations before you can listen to Christmas music.
Really?
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. In my family, we would always play Christmas music while decorating, especially ornaments on the tree.
Yeah.
Get that Christmas music in the background, everything's happy.
Have your family decorated already, or are they waiting for you to get back?
Oh, my family's already decorated. My sister.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, day after Thanksgiving, my sister's like, we're going to the Christmas tree farm. Come on.
Yeah, it sounds great. Now, usually, Kai, I have a process I go through, right, to learn as much as possible about my guest who's going to come on the show. But I'm going to be honest. It was very difficult to find information about you online, all right? You made it as hard as possible. Is that something that gives you, like, a sense of comfort because, I guess, your life and your accomplishments are so private and they're not, like, on display on the internet?
I don't know. I honestly just kind of don't really feel the need to, like, show myself off online that much, but I don't know. Maybe I'll do it in the future a bit more.
Yeah. Well, we're going to show you off today, all right? So
yeah.
We're going to talk to you, and I have a bunch of awesome questions, but let's just listen to some more music and get in the holiday spirit, all right?
Yeah, I love it.
Santa, tell me if you're really there. Don't make me fall in love again if he won't be here next year. Santa, tell me if he really cares. 'Cause I can't give it all away if he won't be here next year.
Row House Cinema joins you in supporting WRCT this holiday season. Row House Cinema is a single-screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week, they choose a new movie theme, showing classic, cult, foreign, animation, fun, and fascinating films in a magical setting. Their concession stand features natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer, and vegan options. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, visit their website at www.rowhousecinema.com or call 412-904-3225. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Kai, you're a singer? What? You sounded great on when you were singing along to that last song, which was Santa Tell Me by Ariana Grande.
Oh, well, thank you. Can't say I think of myself as one, but
yeah, well, you should start caroling. That's a fun Christmas tradition. You know?
Okay.
I mean, well, do you have any other traditions? You already mentioned decorating the tree.
Yeah, decorating the tree. We do a lot of Christmas baking, a lot of sugar cookies, usually chocolate pie around my house.
Ooh, chocolate pie? That sounds really good. Yeah.
We have like a really nice Christmas dinner usually, so that's always fun. I love food.
All right, we're going to play one more song, all right? And then we'll have a chat, all right?
Okay, sounds great.
Awesome.
The fireplace is burning bright, shining all on me. I see the presents underneath the good old Christmas tree. And I wait all night till Santa comes to wake me from my dreams. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I see the children play outside like angels in the snow. Well, Mom and Daddy share a kiss under the mistletoe. And we'll cherish all these simple things wherever we may be. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. The stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
I listen for the thud of reindeer walking on the roof. As I fall asleep to lullabies, the morning's coming soon.
The only gift I'll ever need is the joy of family. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. I'm hanging all the stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Christmas to me. I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. And then for years to come, we'll always know one thing. That's the love that Christmas can bring. That's Christmas to me.
All right. That's Christmas to Me from Pentatonix. They've got a lot of Christmas songs. So, Kai, you're from California.
Yes.
Was Carnegie Mellon, I mean, was that the farthest school from California that you considered going to?
It actually wasn't. I actually considered a lot of kind of more Eastern schools, Purdue, Stevens Institute of Technology, Worcester up in Boston or near Boston, mm-hmm. in Worcester as it happens.
why do you think you were like looking at schools on the East?
I don't know. I was really drawn to engineering, and there's just a lot of good engineering schools in the East, as it happens.
Yeah, so you were primarily looking at schools that were away from California.
Not really. That was a good portion, but I definitely applied to a bunch of California schools. However, for some reason, California schools were really hard to get into, so I didn't get into that many, but I think it worked out in the end.
Do you think you would have preferred to go to a school in California, though?
I'm honestly not sure. It would have been nice to be a little closer to home. However, I think it's a really good experience out here. I actually like it a lot out in Pittsburgh, so.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Do you find yourself trying to find things about Pittsburgh or just that are similar to California? I don't know, because the weather, let's go for the weather. That's not that similar.
That is very different from, or at least where I live in California, yeah.
Is this coat new? Did you have to get a coat just for?
Yes, I did have to get something a bit larger than a hoodie. Yes, that was, yeah.
But do you find yourself looking at other than the weather, other aspects to try to make them seem more similar?
I don't know. There's kind of some aspects that are the same. A lot of the people are really nice in both places. I don't know. It's also just kind of different, living near a big city. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm fairly close to San Francisco, I don't usually go into the city. Right. So,
Carnegie Mellon's campus is kind of not in the downtown part of the city. So do you feel like it's closer, or you're getting more of that city life at Carnegie Mellon than you do back in where you're from near San Francisco?
Yes, I'd say so.
Okay, that's cool. Did you have a distinct moment during the first semester where it hit you that you were you're going to college so far from home?
That's kind of a tough question. I don't know. You kind of just flying out, you feel like, oh, this is kind of a long ways away. Right. It's really different. The weather the first week was actually fairly similar to California, so.
Well, it's August, kind of.
Yeah, and it was August, but it was really hot. It was hotter here than California. Sure. I don't know. But.
Did that help with, transitioning?
I'd say so. I'd say the transition for me was easier than, or at least than I expected, and I think than for a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure why that was. I think I just kind of got lucky in that aspect.
Yeah, well, football, I mean, that's football games here, right? They start at 1.
Yeah.
Which for me is completely normal. And for you, you're telling me, that's shocking that they start at 10 a.m.
Yeah, I was where's the football when I wake up? It's what's going on?
Were there any other things that shocked you in a similar way?
The first time it started getting really cold, I was this is really different going back to the weather.
Right.
Yeah, when I went back home, it was the sky is kind of blue now. What's up with that?
You went back for fall break, and the weather was was it so distinctly different?
Yeah, so it was 60 degrees is so warm. But
when you tell people you're from California, right, do you think that they kind of make judgments or have any preconceived notions about you?
Well, I know a lot of the U.S. does not like California as a state. I don't know if that applies to the people there, but I think there's just a lot of people that are at Carnegie Mellon that are also from California that you kind of just get a wide range of people, and it's not that's the one person from California as opposed to maybe Minnesota or something.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like when you say you're from California, people kind of instantly make a judgment, but you're saying that because there are so many people at CMU who are from California that might not be the case?
Maybe not, but there's definitely people who do, but I don't think that lasts very long because I don't know, everyone's different, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, do you see yourself at any, disadvantage being so far away from home?
Well, it's definitely a pain to travel, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. Thinking kind of later, if I try to do a job out here, it'll just be kind of a different place than I'm used to, as opposed to looking for a job near home where I kind of know the culture, know where everything is. But I think I'll be okay adapting.
Right. Do you think that will help you push you to do jobs, or will that kind of stop you from taking opportunities?
I'm honestly not sure. Yeah. I'd say I'd be interested in kind of seeing around or just kind of what opportunities there are. Location probably would be a factor. Like if I could go home for a job, mm-hmm. I'd probably like that. But a job out here would also be really cool.
You're talking about like after CMU, not like
yes,
not
after
like
CMU,
during, right? So, I mean, do you feel like the fact that you're away from home allows you to focus more on your schoolwork? Because you said the transition was very easy.
Yes. So, I don't know if it like helps me focus a bit more or not. I wouldn't say it's like at the forefront of my mind a lot of the time. Though when I do kind of think of it, it's kind of going home feels a bit more of like a different thing than someone who maybe lives nearby. Mm-hmm. Because it's just kind of different. It'll change things up a bit more for someone else or for me than for someone else.
What do you mean by change things up?
Just kind of like where I am, kind of what the general,
does it,
it's
like,
kind of hard
like,
to explain.
Does it mess with your, like when you're, because you're in a routine, right? And then you have to go, you have to have this like pretty big trip all the way to California, flying three time zones away, right? And then does that like interrupt the flow of your work?
Maybe for a day or two. I don't think I get jet lagged too badly as opposed to other people. I don't know.
How long is the flight?
The flight, direct, it would be 5 hours, but it usually takes longer because there are very few direct flights from Pittsburgh to California and vice versa. But because of the time zones, it doesn't actually take me that long, like, on the clock.
Yeah.
Like, I'll leave here at 3 and I'll get, like, here to California at, like, 10, and it's, like, not that bad. Or, like, leave for the airport at 3.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So at what point... You're studying mechanical engineering, right?
Yes. Not declared yet because freshman year, but
right.
That's where I plan to go into.
At what point did you realize that that's what you wanted to pursue?
Well, I've really liked building things for a while. I like Lego. In high school, I joined a robotics team, and I loved that. And I was really drawn to like the mechanisms part of it, the mechanical part, you might say. Mm-hmm. though. I don't know. It just kind of seemed like the natural thing for me when I was looking at like potential engineering majors or majors in general. And so far, I've really enjoyed it at CMU. So
yeah, I think that speaks to a question that I have, which is like when you study, decide you want to study engineering, do you say I want to study engineering and then look like what kind of engineering I want to study? Or is it more of like, was it always going to be mechanical engineering?
I'd say it's much more I'd want to study some engineering, and then you kind of find out what you want to do based on that. For me, at least, I was either looking at mechanical or maybe like civil engineering because I like structures. I like kind of just the physical things. Mm-hmm. So like electrical engineering is a little more nebulous, so less so for me.
Was anyone in your family an engineer?
Not that I know of, at least.
Was there anyone close to you in your life who was an engineer, or maybe even was like, hey, you should really check out engineering, like it's cool?
So at the robotics club I mentioned before, they kind of have like mentors who were retired engineers, and the work they did was just really cool to me, so they kind of encouraged me to pursue that if I wanted to kind of keep doing what I was doing. So
who initiates that? Do you go to them and say, I want to be an engineer? Do they say, hey Kai, you're good at this, like you should pursue it?
I think it was a little bit of both. Like once you kind of talk to people in the fields and their work seems interesting to you, you're like, hey, like kind of how do you end up doing this? And you just kind of start a discussion, and it's really cool to me, at least.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you said about Legos. Like you said that you like to build Legos, and you mentioned that when I asked you like why you're pursuing engineering.
Yes.
Do you think that your interest in Legos contributed to you deciding to pursue engineering?
At least a little bit, because you just kind of have to think about like the steps in planning, just kind of what are you going to make? And I wouldn't say it's like super applicable to engineering, but there's kind of a transfer of skills, I'd say.
When did you develop that hobby?
It was a while back, at least. I probably got like my first set when I was 5, but I really loved building for a while, at least like since middle school. So
yeah. Do you ever like, do you prefer, okay, this is a huge question. Do you prefer Legos when they're like the blocks and you just put them together and you can kind of be creative? Or do you like to get kits with instructions? I think you were talking about like, it's like, there are a lot of steps that you have to follow.
Well, I enjoy the sets a lot. I think they're really cool. I have probably too many of them, but I think the real fun is just when you're building what you want to build, because in the end, there's really no limit.
Even with the sets?
Or, wait, what?
Like, when you get, don't you get boxes that are, like, tell you how to make this, like, certain thing?
Oh, yeah, but, like, once you go beyond the sets, like, with just, like, free parts that you can get, I think that's a really fun part, just free building.
Yeah, and you'd say it's a hobby of yours to build Legos.
Yes.
Do you ever get, like, embarrassed to tell people that?
I definitely used to, but in college, I don't know.
What was
the response? Not really in college.
Why were you embarrassed?
I don't know. It just kind of felt like a niche thing that like not many people would be interested in, and I don't know.
No one said like it was like a kid's thing that you should stop playing with Legos and like go do your homework or something.
No. I think that was mostly self-inflicted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think for Christmas, someone should get you Legos.
I think they should do that. That would be a really good idea.
Yeah.
Elisha?
Yeah. We got finals, man. I can't be running to the Lego store to buy you Legos. I mean, honestly, that'd be a great gift. Let's listen to another song, and then we'll keep chatting, all right?
Okay.
This is Baby, I'm Coming Home by Allie Brooke.
Charlie Daniels, you're listening to my buddy Eric Jackson Lurie on WRCT 88.3 FM. you know me? Of course you do. Though maybe you haven't seen me in a little while. I'm that drum beat coming through your car radio. And I'm that thumping bass that drags you along with the rhythm. I'm that part of music that makes you wanna dance. I'm a pure gospel song issuing forth from a Sunday morning church house. The winds of change may blow the tree away, but the roots remain. Then, now, and until the end.
Courts in session. The defender of the faith. The defender of the gates. Your host, Eric Jackson Lurie.
Good evening, Pittsburgh. You're listening to WRCT 88.3 FM, streaming online at WRCT.org, WWRO, Kibler, California, 103.3 FM, Time Travel Radio. I'm your rockin' attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, and this is Courts in Session, heard here every Thursday night from 8 to 10:30. Rock and roll, country, and soul is coming your way for the next 2.5 hours.